From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, continuing our series on writing a debugger extension. I think this may be the last one.
Yeah, I'm done with it.
Maybe some of our viewers are too. Yeah. But in any case, we'll go on to something else, something fun. We have some fun stuff planned for the near future. So. All right, so what are we going to talk about? DML, right?
Yeah, so the last thing really to go over is DML, Debugger Markup Language, which is kind of like an HTML-esque language. Mm-hmm. Not very much similar, really just bold italic underscore and some hyperlinking. That's really about the only thing that's the same.
Couple of tags.
Yeah. DML's, well, quite frankly, awesome, right? It's you know, gives you hyperlinks in your output and just makes it a lot easier to... drive apps.
And yeah, I've seen some debugger extensions that use it very nicely.
Yeah.
Kind of just start with one command, and then from then on, you don't have to type. It's all clicky.
Click, 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 yeah.
It's great.
So, like, if I just, for example, do Notepad here and just use DPX from PDE, this gives you a good example of what you can do. Actually, if I change to... zero. You can show you what you can do. You can have hyperlinks. You can cause colorization. I haven't got any bold in here, but we could have bold italics and all that type of stuff. So yeah, quite a diverse amount of markup you can make that makes things quite, you know, a little bit more readable.
Mm-hmm.
The intent here is to, you know, separate strings out from numbers and stuff like that in DPX.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do all this? So last week we ran a program that what's it called before I forget? Execute echo. So what this program did was we normally have this is a DML command, LMD with capital D says give us the LM command and put DML markup on it.
Mm-hmm.
With capital D. What this command did was was it echo as, what was it echo, what was it called? Execute echo DML. So if we asked it to do this, what this did is it ran a private client, scraped the text off the screen or received it as a callback.
Right.
And then we put it out to the screen and just did blat. And what we're going to talk about today is, you know, how do you cause markup that you have in your string that you want to print, how to actually come out as DML, right? Because as you can see, this DML text that we had that someone else made came out as text rather than DML. So up until this point, what we've been doing is just using the output command divided by control or the output wide, depending on whether it's ANSI or Unicode string. What there is another one called controlled blast, a controlled output and controlled output wide. And there is this additional flag that comes in on the front. And if we look this up at MSDN, you'll see that there's this thing called output control, hence the word controlled on the front. And the output control mask tells it how you want it to be emitted. Now, when you run the execute command, you pass in one of these things to say, I want you to execute it, and I want you to execute it on this client so it doesn't get broadcast everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are the same things that you need to add to the front of the command. Now, instead of going through the onerous effort of reading from the current client what you're configured for app control, what you can do is say, let's not worry about trying to specify those things and say, you know, and provide, say, the DML flag. Instead, we'll just use one of these key values down the bottom, which says, I want to use the ambient properties, i.e. what's set, and please toggle on the DML bit, and please toggle off the DML bit. And this one is ambient. It says, just do the text version of it, right? And so by you choosing ambient DML, roughly you're turning on the DML bit in the mask and achieving the goal. And so that's why we have ambient text and ambient DML here as examples. I'll run it as text and you'll see that we'll end up with the same result as we did before. execute echo DML with a redraw bug. We still end up with the DML in
same
it
thing,
because we output it as text. And realistically, output wide realistically is this command. The two of them are equivalent to each other.
Okay.
But if we change it to the DML one, this one, this time it will output as DML. And lo and behold, we've got what we wanted. All right.
Nice.
So that's what, how to execute, that's how to emit DML. You use this control output or control output wide or control output VA. VA is when you use VA args, so the dot, dot, dot thing, like in printf. You just add this ambient DML on the front, and off you go, and everything's great. So let's look at some of these pitfalls. So this one, this command we've been using now, executes a command.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm going to do is just use this, another one that just takes in a string, as in what you came on the command line, and print it directly. So roughly, I'm going to echo what I'm typing.
Okay.
And I'll show some of the pitfalls that you get into. And I've added some start and end stuff. So sometimes the markup can get confused. And you'll see that if the end should come out as a nice, clean line.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it will be missing. Sometimes it will get markup on it that you don't expect. And I'll show you the pitfalls.
Okay.
So let's use this command. And echo as DML. This is this command actually is in the MSDN magazine article and has a good multi-page explanation of it. So if you want to read it about it again, read it there. So for example, yeah, this is a very common HTML markup for bold, and you can see, I'm not sure if it's very clear, but that's a bolded markup.
A little hard to tell, but I think I can see.
Yeah. So let's say I make a mistake and just have B, I miss the slash on the end.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that markup will continue, right? You are actually changing the string. This is like an HTML document. So you've got to be, you've got to pair your elements, right?
Right. I can kind of make out, it looks like the end is still
actually
bolded.
Let's,
there.
Let's go, so now we've got italics turned on. Right.
Okay.
So, if you want to fix that, you need to, turn the italics off and turn the bold off. Right. And now the end looks nice and clean again.
Oh, so it kept it even after the command completed. Yeah. It still kept that state.
Yeah. So if this turn bold on, right? So bold's on now. Actually, we'll turn on italics because I think italics is actually we'll turn on underline. Underline's a bit more. Bit more obvious, right? And so if we do the R command,
right? Now you've messed everybody up.
Yeah, so you got to be clean,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's fine and all, and it's kind of easy to get bold and italic and underscore correct. It's when you're trying to output some text. So let's say that you read a buffer off the screen or a buffer from some memory location,
mm-hmm.
and normally it's a string that says foo, right? And so you say output some foo, and it works fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if foo was explaining something to do with XML, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because the engine is an HTML type rendering engine, it sees this as, instead of me trying to output a string called foo that just happened to be some XML block, right, as a string, it's actually seeing it as markup. And in the case of foo, it's seen it as a markup command it doesn't understand and it's actually thrown it away. Right, and you get a similar thing if you do things like 3 is less than 4, right? Well, the bracket here is studded an XML node, but you do the other way and it's going to work because it didn't start the tag or the notation for a node and or an element and then drew it correctly. So you need to be aware of that. So
is there an escape?
There is
character?
exactly right. You can do so much like in HTML. You use the standard substitution thing. So this is a less than sign, so you're less than semicolon, right? And so this is where you've got to be kind of careful. You'll notice that there's a semicolon on this command.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the semicolon is the command separator.
Right.
So we need to actually put some quotes around this to make it so it doesn't think that we're running two different commands. Mm. And so if we do that, you still have,
It didn't work.
It's the way the command parsing is kicking in. But if you did this normally,
if you did it through your code,
It would work. Yeah. Now, doing all these things is kind of annoying, right? Having all these, like, if I want to print foo. If it just happens to be a string that I'm trying to represent, that I'm maybe spewing out some XML stuff, I don't want to have to be escape sequencing this all the time. Mm-hmm. So actually, the engine realizes, or the API has knowledge that this is a big deal, and actually simplifies it for you. So normally you would just use percentage s then something. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a special notation that they've added to the printf parser, mm-hmm. and it's called percentage y, has to be uppercase, then curly braces lowercase t, which means it's a text that's coming in. And what that means is I am going to give you text, and I want you to render it as text and don't treat it as markup, right?
Okay.
So if I use percentage y curly brace t, mm-hmm. curly brace, echo as DML, and this time we'll do foo, out comes foo.
Yeah, okay.
So you don't have to go through the rigmarole of changing all of your less thans and greater thans and semicolons and ampersands and all those things to the ampersand, LT, GT, amp, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier way of printing out strings. So if you are reading a string from memory,
mm-hmm.
and you are outputting it as ambient DML. Now, normally you'd output this as text, right? Because if you're just outputting it generally, there is no DML markup on here.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you wanted to say, hey, I want this to be in bold, where that's why you need the markup.
Right.
You know, that justifies the
DML.
The DML. And then, and the foo is in bold.
Right.
That justifies that. So percentage y, capital Y, curly brace, lowercase t, curly brace. I never remember it.
It is kind of difficult to.
The way I find it, and let's see if I can find it today as fast as I think I can. DML, Andrew Richards, MSDN.
You look up your own article.
And then I find the magazine article right here, number one hit. And then I read it. I know it's not the best way of remembering how to find it, but down here, there's a whole section on all this stuff. And this is us seeing these start ends and stuff like that. And here's the escape sequencing, if you wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then down here somewhere is the explanation of these things. The other one that you may want to use is, you notice that this is successfully rendered out in both the YT and the MA cases. In all cases, it successfully does it. MA is, instead of providing an address in your address space, so this, in this example here, this args address is in the debugger extension's address space.
Okay.
If you put percentage MA and provide an address in the target's address space, the debugger will actually go to the target, read the string out of the target's address space, and print it for you. Which means you don't have to read the memory from the process. Mm-hmm. You just go straight percentage MA. Now, when you do that, it's like YT. It will not apply markup to it. Right.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you're just reading a string from the dump or from dump or the live process, just to then do a YT on it, then just do straight percentage MA and skip the read in the first place. Let the engine do it for you.
Makes sense.
All right. So that's roughly the guts of how to get it out of the screen. Let's see this more in action about all the other tags that we've done. So what I've done is I've written a program called example that just prints out every single example there is. Right, so what I did is I just went into the dml.doc, which is in the debugger folder, mm-hmm. and then copied out a lot of that stuff. So example. All right, so here are all of the things that you can mark up. There's bold, which I've shown, italic, and underscore. I find that italic and underscore are a little bit, not an appropriate thing. Like, it's hard to read, like particularly a number in italic is hard to read. Mm, yeah. And I find that it's not a good notation. Equally, underscore has this hint of hyperlink.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those two don't really go well. I've tried them in the past, I've played with them, and then normally by the time I've released the software, I've stripped it back out again and gone back to bold.
Right. I think bold kind of is better with certain fonts than others.
Yeah. So the next two are the hyperlink ones. The syntax is the same as each other. One is called link and one is called exec. Think of it like an anchor in HTML, like an A, and where the CMD is the href.
Mm-hmm.
What's in here is the command that we're going to execute. I gave this example because if you want to open a URL, like you know, to a website, the ext extension in the Windows 8 release added this URL extension. And so you click on this and then, you've got to have the HTTP on it. And it will pop up Internet Explorer for you. So if you want to pop a URL, that's the way to do it. The difference between link and execute. So a link, which way is it? A link does not go into your execute queue, execute does. So what that means is there is a, I always forget where this is. I think it's the command browser. So under here, the commands that you've executed are listed in this UI. So if I click on this one, is it that one? Anyway, the link doesn't put it in the history. The execute does put it in the history, right? And in general, you don't want that. You don't want click, 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 click to destroy your back history.
Mm-hmm.
And so nearly every single debug extension uses link, not execute.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if that was the right window head up, but you'll see it pop up in the list.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, like I said, just use link. All right, so, and of course, you know, with a standard like href, you can have any text in the body of the link. It doesn't have to match the command that you're executing. One thing I will say is with hyperlinks, and I'll get to the rest in a sec, is be aware of how users are using your code. So like, if this text or this area of your output has a high probability of someone copy-pasting it and putting it into, say, case notes,
mm-hmm.
having a link that says data rather than maybe an address is not wise, because you want the text form of it to be usable, right? So try to think of that when you put the link there, make it so that if it's converted to text in someone's brain or in notes and stuff, that's still kind of readable rather than just having a thing that says, you know, like one letter saying more or something, right? Now, how do you know that's the case? So if you're emitting DML, like particularly this stuff, it may be completely wasted if you are in CDB. So CDB is a text-only debugger, right?
Right.
And so you actually can ask the engine, what are your capabilities? And so there's two sides to this. Can the engine even output DML? And so what I've got is this little function that uses the advanced to interface and the request command. Request is kind of this generic catch-all way of asking questions into the debugger. And there's a whole lot of these defines to give you an answer to a question. So is any output callbacks DML aware? In other words, is anybody who's listening to this right now capable of receiving DML? So if you're in CDB, for example, the answer is going to be no. It's only going to make output callbacks that are all text-based, right? And if you look back at the output callbacks 2 stuff we did last week, this is what it relates to. What are you capable of? If you use output callback or output callbacks wide, they by definition are text. If you use output callbacks 2 and declare that you are text or DML aware, you will affect this value. So this little function, this returns true or false, whether the debugger you are in can actually display DML. And you may want to make a decision that if the answer is no, instead of putting that hyperlink there, put in the actual data, right? Because the hyperlink's never going to render.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, and this is where that LMD, the capital D, comes in, is whether the person actually wants to see DML, right? And so SOS4 is a good example of this. If preferred DML is set to 0, it doesn't add DML markup to its text. If preferred DML is set to 1, it will. Same goes with the LM command. So I had to force it into DML mode because we don't have preferred DML running. So if we do an LM, it's blank. If we turn DML on and do it now with the redraw bug, DML is shown. So before, when DML was off, it didn't work. And to force it, I added the capital D to say, I want you to, redraw bug, I want you to show DML. Mm-hmm. So that's what that's about. So if you want to act as a proper citizen of the DML world, you should adhere to people's DML's wishes and maybe toggle that on and off.
Which right. will help them if they're using CDB versus WinDBG. Well,
it just gives you much better output. If you're gonna, it really only comes down to emit DML always if you're gonna output the same thing. If what you're outputting is recently text or DML agnostic, but if you are trying to shorten some text on the screen by using DML, you should be aware that in a CDB environment, in a text environment, you should be using the preference and the ability to maybe print out something larger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just be aware. Just be a good citizen. So that covers bold italic underscore, covers hyperlinks, which is particularly, as I said, the shortening of data. And the last one is color. So there's this col keyword, much like bold and italic, it defines boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
There's FG for foreground and there's BG for background. You can use one or. You can use foreground only, background only, or both of them together.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, what I've done is I'm saying the foreground is this keyword source comment, and then the text inside the bracket goes out as that color.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, what I've done is I've set the foreground color and the background color. The foreground color actually is WBG is the Windows background color, i.e. white.
Right.
And source string is the default colors for a string. So when you have a source editor up, it will show strings as blue. It will show comments as green. You can't control color from an RGB point of view. You can only do it from these predefined words.
And these are configurable in the debugger, right?
Exactly, yeah. And so these are the keywords here, and this is directly from the dml.doc file, and they're configurable under here, as in they're changeable. Now, you'll notice that if you look at a lot of the color markup you'll see in like PDE, I use the source ones because it's very low odds that someone's going to go change the color of a number or the color of a comment.
Mm-hmm.
It is highly likely, though, that they'll change the color of the Windows background. So is this, if I change this Windows background and change it to green, right, and then I run, you notice that this got updated, but this foreground stuff didn't.
Right.
So a bit of an interesting. Artifact.
There we go.
You'll see that it's picked up that new color based on the preferences. So that can damage your look and feel. So like when I was doing like DPX, I really want it to come out a certain way. So I forced the background color to be white and I forced the foreground color to be these colors based on those words. But I have kind of forsaken the green out here.
Yeah.
Because I don't want green on green.
Right.
Right. So there's this balance between user and a default user and power user.
Right.
And you're never going to really get it to a nice point.
I do know some people who change their Windows debugger to have a black background and things like that.
So I think in those cases,
not uncommon.
You could, in theory, if just when it comes to background, maybe that's one thing I probably could honor in here rather than doing it this way. So let's put this back just because I don't want to live with this. What are these words? So what I would use personally is these source ones. So the source ones are to do with, there's a comment that's going to be green, an annotation, I'm not sure what that color is, a character, a string, an ID, a number. all these have colors within that are default. I tend to use those ones, as I say, because the odds are that people aren't going to go and change those.
Yeah.
Right. And I try to stay away from the Windows background, the current line background. These ones are highly probable they're going to get modified. And then it just goes on and on and on. So all of the ones, so that's the normal stream background, the normal foreground, warning. So we've seen normal, warning, error, mm-hmm. for both all those ones from mm-hmm. what we've talked about. So they're all there and they all have these keywords. But as I said, I stick with the source ones because they seem to be a bit more of a constant.
Seems maybe less likely that somebody goes and changes those because they're kind of consistent across multiple environments too. Like, you know, green is usually a comment, right?
Yeah. I don't tend to foreground with background much. Mm-hmm. I tend to just do foreground type stuff. What DPX does is it says at the start, it says, around the whole command, it says my background is going to be this color, and then per line, it changes the foreground color. Mm-hmm. So I don't have like background nonstop over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like a background around the whole thing, and then foregrounds, and that's how it's done. So that's really DML. Add it to extension, it makes them much more valuable. Awesome for things like I've seen extensions where there's like a table. Right. And the column heading is like Excel or most tables where you click on the heading and it will sort it by that column.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
So that's a very cool way of enriching a data set. So you might be having a memory matrix, right? And I want to sort it by page pool rather than non-page pool and all these other, committed versus private versus whatever.
Yeah.
So, very powerful, very useful. And that's where we are for the end of the series, I reckon.
All right. Great. Well, as always, if you have questions or comments, email us at defragtools@microsoft.com or put them in the show notes down below. And tune in next week and we'll have something else exciting and interesting for
you. Something cool.
Something cool, we hope. All right. Thanks for watching. Bye.
See you next week.